This is Report to Wyoming.
This show targets local issues that matter right here in Natrona County, where we talk to real people about their thoughts and ideas. In today's episode, I sit down with Cody Diedrich to discuss homeless teens in Natrona County. Cody works for a nonprofit called Unaccompanied Students Initiative, which he refers to as USI throughout. USI's main goal is to help homeless teens pursue their education, and then they begin to focus on goals after graduating high school or obtaining a GED. I was really touched by her passion for what she does, and I enjoyed chatting with her so much. She starts off by telling me how she got started.
Been in the medical field. Well, I went to college to be medical administration and management. That was a long time ago, in the early 90s, okay? So it was very boring for me. It was a lot of sitting in my office doing the same thing. 9 o'clock you did this, 10 o'clock you did this. So that was really boring for me. So I was like, I need to get out of this or I'm going to fall asleep. So then I got into office management and human resources. And I absolutely loved it because I multitasked. I worked with people. I mentored people. And that's just kind of where I stayed until about 2015, where I got laid off. Everything in Casper kind of took a downturn about that time. Then I started working for the school district as a sub. And I liked that because I worked mostly with special needs. And I really liked that, but it still was not doing what I need. And one day I came home after a bit of frustration at the school district, and I just found this job and I applied for it. And they originally wanted you to have a bachelor's degree. Well, I don't have a bachelor's degree. All I have is a certificate in medical office management. And so I applied for it and interviewed for it, and here I am 2 years later. And it's the best job, and I absolutely love it.
Oh, wow. That is incredible. What do you love most about it?
Probably mentoring kids and my staff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did it come naturally? How has that evolved over the years?
It did come naturally because I have 4 kids of my own. I have 6 grandkids. I have always, a child growing up, we always had kids in our house, families in our house that didn't have homes. So that for me was like a natural thing just falling into. But for me, most importantly, is I love to help people. And in this job, not only do I get to help my staff evolve into better people, different people, but I get to help my kids, my work kids, become something better or different than what they're used to.
Oh, that's beautiful. I relate to you on that. I have 2 daughters, and I'm one of 6 kids, the co-eldest with my identical twin sister. So she would say she's the eldest. But so can you tell the listeners a little bit about your organization and what you guys do specifically? I know I've kind of already done my research, but I don't know if everybody knows what you guys do.
Sure. So it's called Unaccompanied Students Initiative. We originated out of Cheyenne, moved up to Casper in late 2019, opened in early 2020, right before COVID hit. Our organization houses kids ages 16 to 20 till their 21st birthday. And our whole purpose is to give homeless kids or unaccompanied kids a place to stay. And I say kids because when you're 20, you're still a kid, right, in my eyes. So we give them a safe place to stay. And it's not just food, clothing, and shelter. It's so much more than that. Between me and my staff and my volunteers, we are there for resources, support, and to mentor our kids. Our goal at USI is to get them into school or back into school for their diploma. If their diploma is not an option, we work with them to get their HISA or their GED up at the college. Once they've achieved those 2 things, we do college prep, maybe military, maybe it's just workforce, a trade school, whatever it is for them to be successful, because each one of their successes is different. So we look at all avenues for them so they can be successful in whatever success or whatever it is they feel they can go do.
Something that I totally was unaware of was that there is a homelessness problem in Natrona County, amongst our youth too. And so how prevalent is that? Is this, I mean, volume-wise, are you guys operating at maximum capacity? What does that look like?
So it differs from day to day. At the beginning of the year, I had six girls and three boys. I'm sorry, I had six boys and three girls. Probably by the end of the month with the intakes that I've done this week, we will be at max and we will have six girls and three boys. And that's the amount that we can house currently.
What happens when you are completely full? Where do people go if they need your help?
If you're under 18, there's no place for these kiddos to go. If you're 18 and over, you can go to the rescue mission. I don't suggest that's where an 18-year-old goes because they're still, in my eyes, quite mature and still need that, for lack of better terms, coddling or that mother or fatherly figure and support. So there's no other place for them to go at this time.
What do you infer happens to them if that's the case?
Unfortunately, they oftentimes go back on the streets, sleeping in cars, parks, stores, friends' couches, abandoned trailers. I mean, or they go back into a situation maybe at their guardian's or their parents' house of abuse.
Are there any commonalities that you tend to see over and over again amongst these unaccompanied students and teens?
70% are LGBTQ community, and about 60% of the kids that I've had live at the house have come from adoptive families.
When they do come, are there any requirements as far as drug testing?
We don't do any drug testing because we have a zero tolerance for drugs, alcohol, tobacco, weapons, or harassment of any sort. So if they do come into our program and they have any of these issues, then we have to release them from USI.
Gotcha. Person who ends up coming to you guys over and over again? I'm thinking like common factors, age, sex, and maybe socioeconomic background.
Yes. So in the 75 kids that I have either lived in the house or have come to USI for services, 100% come from abusive backgrounds. And that abuse is sexual, physical, emotional, psychological, and substance. Every kid in my house has that background.
What do you, kind of resources do you guys provide for them outside of helping with education?
Oh, gosh, where do I begin? So I have partnered up with some people in the community, mainly Mercer House, Self-Help Center, WBI, and when they come in, I give them a packet of lots of resources in the community, food banks, medical care, healthcare for the homeless, that kind of stuff. While they're there, we get them into counseling if they choose. We have people who do either outside in the community or telehealth. We work with a couple of people doing telehealth with us for mental health. We make sure that in school, if they're in school, if they need an IEP or need tested or have learning disabilities or anything of that sort, I always work with Greta Hindelighter. She's our liaison through the school district, and to get them the testing and the extra help that they need. We have found that kids who come from abusive families or situations don't think the way that kids that don't come from families like that think. They don't learn the same way. They don't comprehend the same way. And oftentimes they start getting a good night's rest. They've got food in their bellies. They have a calm situation at the house, and they're able to think better at school. So we work with their counselors, their teachers, again, Greta, any kind of administrative staff, to make sure that they get all of the resources that they need.
So do you eat food together? Are there meals together, I should say?
Yes. So breakfast and lunch is pretty much on your own, right? They're all teenagers. Who wants to sit down and have breakfast with your parents, right?
Right.
We do require them to eat. If they are home and they're not at work or school function, we do require them to cook 1 to 2 meals a week. They plan it, often shop for it and execute it and serve it. And so we sit down between 6 and 6:30 every night of the week, and just eat as a family.
Oh my gosh. And yep. You sit with them too?
Absolutely. Yeah. My staff or myself, whoever's on call or on duty that night, will sit with the kids.
Do you think that that's an important piece of this, is just having what you're saying, family, a community, a place where people want to engage in discourse with them and talk and chat about their day.
Absolutely. So the biggest thing that I hear from these kids, it's always a pushback. Why do we have to sit down and eat dinner together? That's so dumb. But here's my thing. That's something that they're not used to. That's not normal to them. Once they start doing it and they're able to sit down and talk with the staff and the students, one, and realize they're not alone in their situation. Two, we've got each other's backs and we're all here to support each other. Their demeanor changes, and then they're willing to come out. And it's crazy to see when they first come in, and after a month, after 3 months, after 6 months of being there, completely different kids. It's just amazing. Yeah, it's giving me goosebumps right now just thinking about it.
Yeah, me too. I'm thinking about how relationships that could be built, it's really just networking, but it's more familial than that. And these relationships that maybe help people grow in ways that they couldn't on their own. Knowing that someone's going through something that's similar, although they're all from different backgrounds and things. Mm-hmm. Have you seen those relationships blossom, or really good friendships that have lasted?
Yes, in some cases, yes. Unfortunately, if a kiddo comes to the house and they develop a relationship and then that kiddo has to leave, they don't always stay in touch. But I do have a group of probably four students who are no longer with us who still stay in contact with each other.
And do they contact you too?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because my nickname is the warden. One of the students came in and he called me the warden, and she said, I thought you were the warden, like you were just barking orders at all of us all the time. She said, after about 2 months, I realized you weren't the warden. You were really a mom who just cared about her kids. And she said it was really hard for me to basically be on my own and taking care of myself because I didn't have that parental figure to come to USI and then have that. And now that I'm out on my own, I miss it so much. And then I have kids who I don't hear from 4 months, and then all of a sudden they'll call me and say, hey, can you tell me where that food bank is again, or somebody who can help me with my rent?
Wow, this is so amazing. So you've told me about the cooking. Now I'm wondering about the cleaning. Who's cleaning this house? What does it look like?
So we all clean.
Because I'm a mom, so it's me.
Right. So
flash.
Depending on how many kids we have in the house will depend on if every chore gets done every day or not. The main ones are dishes and trash. If we have 9 kids in the house, we got to vacuum and sweep and mop every single day. It just gets crazy, you know, and on top of staff. If we only have 2 kids in the house, we just make sure that dishes and trash are done, and then maybe once a week we'll sweep, mop, and vacuum, that kind of thing. So it all just depends. Every week, my staff and I will sit down and say, okay, who's going to do dishes on Monday? Who's going to do dishes on Tuesday? We used to try to have it so-and-so did it on every Tuesday, so-and-so did it on every Monday, you know, but because the fluctuation of kids in the house, we just can't do that. So it's literally, sometimes it's a day-to-day basis.
Gotcha. Do you feel like it does fluctuate pretty often?
Unfortunately, yes. When I first started working for USI, we had only one student for several months. And then we went from 1 to 4 in a matter of a week, and then 4 to 9, and then down to 2. So I don't know from day to day, because we're not a lockdown facility, so these kiddos can leave anytime they want. We prefer they stay, but if they want to go, they can go. So it changes on a day-to-day basis.
Do you have repeat kids that come and go?
I do. So there have been three kids that I had to release in the past. One of them was with us for a year, and she actually just returned to our program this week.
Oh, that's
so
exciting.
Yeah, I'm very excited to have her back. She's going to be back in school and have the ability to get to school, have a good night's sleep instead of sleeping on the couch, have food in her belly. I mean, I take it for granted that I have food at will, right?
Right.
When you don't have that, you can't think straight. And so I just saw her yesterday, and she moved in a couple days prior, and she said, Corey, I'm so glad to be back. So I'm getting all choked up. Just a quick story about this young lady. When I first met her, she didn't look at me. She didn't talk to me. I did all the talking. She just shook her head. The first day at my house, she said, "Don't look at me. Don't touch me. Don't talk to me. And definitely do not hug me." And I said, "Okay, I know your boundaries." And I tell this story because these kids have a lot of, they have a lot of walls up, right? A lot of defenses up. So 2 months goes by, and every time you talk to her, it didn't matter who talked to her, students and staff, she looked at the ground, nodded her head. One Friday afternoon, I'm leaving, and I said, "Okay, does anybody need anything from me? I'm going away for the weekend. Who needs anything?" And everybody's like, "Nope, we don't need anything." I said, "Okay, everybody have a great weekend." I get to the door, and I hear her say, "Corey, wait a second." And I said, "Sure, what is it you need?" And she said, "A hug."
Oh,
and I mean, it's been 2 years since this happened, but it still makes me teary-eyed because 2 months, all she needed was just that safe, stable environment to know that she was going to be okay. And then when I gave her those boundaries and allowed her to have those boundaries, she knew she could trust me. So when I left and she told me I needed a hug, I knew right then and there that this kiddo was going to be making strides. And she went from D's and F's and not attending to A's and B's and attending every day to school.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that got me. Last week I went to this training for human trafficking, and there's just some overlap here in that you don't know people's histories. And so just because they're not looking at you or looking in the eyes doesn't mean that there's a lack of respect. It's just you don't know what people have been through. Mm-hmm. And so, wow, that really got me, hit me in the feels.
Yeah.
And it must be hard with the nickname The Warden, for instance. It must be hard having to sometimes be, I guess, for lack of a better word, the bad guy. Or, you know, it's very obvious that you have a big heart and you care so much, but you don't always get to be positive reinforcement, right? Sometimes you probably have to be that disciplinarian. And how do you do that?
So I always tell the kids I have a mom hat and a boss hat, okay? I have to wear my boss hat because I have a program to run, okay? I have rules that are set by my board that I have to follow. But there are times where I need to wear my mom hat. And it's a struggle some days. Which hat do I want to wear? My mom heart is telling me this kid just needs a little more time, but my boss hat is telling me they've already gone through the list of things and they're not making any progress. So I don't know if it's a fine line or a thick line, but it's a struggle. The hardest part of my job is releasing a kid knowing that they're going to go back into a poor situation. It's the worst. I lose sleep over it. It's like I'm about to cry right now.
I can imagine. This sounds horrible. Yeah. And you are a mom, as you said. So.
Sure.
I don't know. I feel like that opens up your heart to just more empathy for people than maybe that's just me. But in my case, when I became a mom, it's like hard not to look at everyone like, oh, they were just a little baby once. So
this is why, you know, I have a lot of people say to me, well, if they're not going to follow the rules and they're not going to be thankful, then why do you have them there? And I say to them, here's the thing. We don't know what that kid has been through. And instead of just looking at their behaviors, let's look at what their feelings are behind that behavior and why. Like, what need do they have that we can help them with to maybe dissipate those behaviors? And when I talk about success, I talk about when a kiddo comes in and they don't know what a stove is because they grew up in a hoarder situation and all they used was a microwave, and then they know what the stove is. They can now cook a mean chicken fettuccine and now living on their own and still cooking chicken fettuccine 3 times a week. That is success. A kiddo who doesn't know that brushing your teeth and taking a shower every day is really important to them getting up, brushing their teeth, making their bed, and sitting down and having breakfast. You know, something they may have not been used to in the past. That's success. It's not about graduating high school. It's not about going on to college. It's not about getting your nursing degree. It's about those little things that get you to those next points, my opinion.
What does the house look like? Like, how's the rooming situation, all of that? I'm curious.
Yeah, so right now we rent a building, and it's kind of in a U shape. On one side we have six bedrooms. Actually, we have six student bedrooms, two baths, and then we have a staff room. On the other side, we have three bedrooms, a staff room in my office, two kitchens, two family rooms. The girls currently on the small side have their own bathrooms, which is obviously pretty cool for girls. But we've swapped sides a couple of times depending on our needs at that time.
What about like clothes, shoes, those kind of things? Do they have to go get them themselves?
Most kids come in with some clothes. Some kids come in with the clothes on their back. So we have a closet that we have organized according to size and not so much gender anymore or identity. We just let them go in and take whatever it is they need. So we have clothes and shoes in there so they can take whatever they want. I always say to them, if you take something and you don't like it, please make sure you wash it and fold it and put it back. If you take it, you can leave with it when you decide to move out. However, if you have something that you've outgrown or you no longer like it or whatever the reason is, if it's in good shape, wash it, put it back in the closet so we can just pay it forward for the next kiddo who comes in.
Do you guys feel like you have enough help with the staff you have and maybe volunteers? I don't know.
So to be completely honest, no, I do not have enough staffing and haven't had since I have worked for USI. I'm really grateful that I've had some wonderful volunteers because they have had to cover a lot of shifts for us. If we didn't have those volunteers and the two staff that I had that would make me at the house a lot. And I already work 60 hours roughly a week. And there have been times that I've worked 4 months straight by myself, with the exception of a volunteer staff coming in the evenings. That did just recently change for staffing because I just hired three people. So that is like a breath of fresh air for me, knowing that, one, I don't have to put in all those hours and take away from my own family, and two, that those kiddos have that support system.
And so we've touched on the emotional challenge of it. Are there other challenges that make it hard to find staffing?
Yes.
Or to keep staffing, maybe?
Yeah. So I'm not sure why people think that this job is an easy job. They're like, it's all you do is show up and help them cook. No. You are dealing with kids who need way more support than you realize. They have emotional struggles, mental health struggles, physical struggles, homework struggles. Homework is a big deal. So we need staff who is patient, kind, relaxed, of course, first aid certified, because we do have crisis at the house. But you have to have a passion for it. It's not, you have to love kids and you have to love to help. It's not a general entry-level run-of-the-mill job.
And then does it seem pretty safe? Does everybody feel safe when they're there, or does it ever get challenging that way?
In the Casper house, I've never had any physical altercations.
Oh.
Because what we do is we as staff, and I hope as students, when we see that there's an issue arising, I am contacted immediately. We have had incidents in the past where some kiddos were talking about self-harm, and it was midnight and I was called because we knew that we needed to intervene immediately. But as far as kids physically fighting or students having a physical altercation with staff, that's never happened.
And it is September, Suicide Awareness Month. And so I wanted to ask, even though it's kind of uncomfortable, is that something that commonly happens in this community of kids?
I'm not an expert on suicide by any means. I can just tell you from the experiences that I've had in my life and working at USI, I deal with a lot of kiddos who have attempted or attempted suicide, have done self-harm, and continue to attempt suicide.
What can you do?
Gosh, there's lots of resources. I reach out to the Mercer House, the Self-Help Center, of course, the Task Force. We have just a bunch of people who work with us, who are mental health professionals, who are doctors, nurses, teachers. And so we just, I'm very transparent with my partners about what the situation is, because I want to make sure I get the best help and resource for that kiddo.
What can the public do to help Unaccompanied Students Initiative, or USI?
Oh, gosh, we have lots of volunteer opportunities. One, you can become a volunteer and work at the house. That's a big deal, especially when I'm down staff and kids need help with their homework, or they need rides back and forth to school or doctor appointments. So you can do that. We always need paper goods, shampoo, so toilet paper, paper towels, dish soap, laundry detergent, Lysol wipes, all those cleaning products. Those are a big deal. Foods, we can always use produce. Produce, eggs, and milk. Right now we're good on meats, but sometimes we're pretty low on meats. Another thing is we are in the process of we're going to be building a house that will house 7 boys, 7 girls out in Mills, hopefully in the spring. All the details are still in the works, but we're really looking for someone who can come and help organize, help pack, help us get moved, just kind of coordinate all of that and be part of our team to operate and put that into motion.
How long has this been in the works?
The new house?
Yeah.
probably the last 2 to 3 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's all very new.
That's really exciting. Yeah. Very cool. And so some of your new staff, I'm guessing, are going to go over there?
Correct, yes. So it's going to be a twin home. So, of course, we're going to have to ramp up our staff. Again, I don't know all the details. We don't know the details yet because it's still so fresh. But I will definitely have to ramp up the staff. And when you have 14 kids to take care of course, you're going to need extra hands. So the more volunteers I have, the more supplies and food I have for them, the better we can take care of them.
Now, even though this isn't like open to the it's open to the community, the public.
It is now.
I guess what I'm getting at is there an open house or something where people could go check it out?
There will be. Once we get open, we're going to do an open house. Again, I don't know any of those details, but anybody who wants to get involved, become part of our team, volunteer, donate, they can contact you or contact me.
Okay. Yeah. We'll send them your way. And if you get those details, let me know and we'll be there and just get some pictures and just let the community see what's happening. It was the topic of homelessness and homelessness amongst the youth, specifically in Natrona County. Like I said, I just didn't really realize that it was that big of a local issue. What else would you like the public to know about it?
I often have people say to me, we don't have homeless teens in this community, in this neighborhood. How do you know they're homeless? Well, I know they're homeless because they reach out to me on a weekly basis, sometimes a daily basis. The reason you don't see them is because they're not at the rescue mission, because you have to be 18 to be at the rescue mission. They're not hanging out at the library because that's where a lot of the clients from the rescue mission go during the day. And they're not at the bus hub downtown. They're in school, they're with their friends, or they're hiding out. You see them, you often think, oh, that kid didn't shower, or he must come from a poor family, or, you know, she must be an outcast or whatever. They don't look at the big picture of what is really going on with that child.
What other signs might indicate that someone could be in that situation?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Some of these kids are really good about hiding it. I often tell kids, I was so afraid to come and talk to you because I didn't want you to judge me.
This has been Report to Wyoming, presented in the public interest by Town Square Media.